Are your daffodils drenched? Are your walnut trees looking waterlogged? You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. April showers have hit Greater Cincinnati hard these past few weeks, and the rainfall has taken a toll on many of our gardens. We're going to talk about that today on our gardening show, along with tips for tackling invasives and what's best to plant this time of year. Joining me now are Civic Garden Center Ecology Education Manager, Mary Dudley. Thanks for being here, Mary.
Thank you so much.
Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director, Peter Huttinger. Welcome back, Peter.
Thank you.
And Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach, Scott Berline. Thanks for being here, Scott.
Thank you.
Now, if Joe Boggs were here, he would say it should be Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo. Do
and
you feel that way?
He would be right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we know you have questions, so give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Scott, the rain that devastated communities in Ohio and Kentucky also soaked our gardens. What should you do if floodwaters got to your gardens? Do you have any tips, any advice?
That's a really good question. Fortunately, I think nothing was flooded for very long, like over 10 days at the most, I believe. So I don't think it was a problem for root rot and trees and plants that are growing in those areas. Especially the ones that have been there for a long time, you know, the native ones and plants that people have known that can tolerate floods. We were just talking before the show about edibles, and that is a really good question. And not up my ballywick, but I would be very, very hesitant to eat anything that was covered in river silt.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of bad things that could be in that, and there's really not much of a way of knowing what would be. You could take them and test them. Why is that even worth it? If it's my garden and I had something, fortunately, it's a time of year most people don't have a lot out that's edible, but I would just start over hopefully let rain come in, kind of rinse things off, sort of give us a new start.
Yeah. Peter, are you dealing with that in any of the gardens you...
Yeah, one of our gardens in the East End, the water got up to us, and although there was about an inch of water in the pathways, it didn't cover the beds. And some of the beds were in wooden raised bed boxes, but it's still there, but it's a concern. I mean, like you say, I mean, they've done a lot over the several decades or multiple decades to clean up the Ohio River. There's been a huge improvement, but, you know, what's upstream does come downstream, and so that you do want to be concerned with that. Like Scott said, most things aren't in the ground, but we do have carrots and radishes, so we're going to be thinking about this afternoon. It's going to be the first time we're at the East End Garden, so we'll be thinking about what to pull, whether just to pull some of these crops that were in the ground as opposed to the ones that are above the water in the raised beds. But, you know, particular pollution, whether it be, you know, lead or whatever. I mean, some of the stuff, it's sitting on the surface of the plant. So, you know, it goes a long way to wash things off. Even commercially or commodity crop produce that you might buy that's not organic, it's still a good idea to wash those fruits. I mean, the USDA and the Anabri will tell you that it's safe to eat anything. But there are certain safeguards and precautions you want to take. And even if you grow vegetables in your own yard, I mean, you know, you don't want to eat something with bird poop on it. I mean, it sounds kind of silly, but I mean, you do, you know, you do things. You soak your broccoli in brine to make sure there's no worms hiding in it. You know, just all those little home gardener tips. But you should definitely just take them a lot more serious and amp them up a little bit if river water made it to your garden.
Yeah, especially with bird flu going around, you don't want to eat anything that has droppings on it, I guess.
I don't know enough about that whole thing to really comment on it. But
fair enough.
It's just any time you don't want to eat bird poop.
No, not on my menu, that's for sure.
Dog, cat, it's all.
Yeah. Mary, it seems like this would be a good time to really check for drainage problems in the garden. What do you advise looking for to make sure everything's working properly that way?
Yeah, so I can definitely say from personal experience that my chicken coop is not where I want it to be after all of these very heavy rains.
Can chickens swim? Can you tell us anything?
They should figure it out.
Yeah.
Get their little duck feet on.
Yeah.
So I'm just very conscious of that. We want things to dry out quickly, especially if we start to get some heavy rain events in the warmer months. You want things to be draining in less than 72 hours so that you don't have mosquito buildup and habitat. So right now, you know, you're paying attention to those soggy areas, and there are some wonderful resources in our county for rain gardening. And so if you're interested in starting a rain garden, there's a really wonderful series that you can plug into with the county. And also rain barrels are a wonderful way to capture this extra excess runoff. You know, you don't necessarily need to store all of the water right now, but even just holding it until after these big rain events and then releasing it at a later time is something we can do. I am looking at our swales, and so where we have planted groups of trees, our orchard trees, we usually dig a little swale on contour so that we're able to capture water as it flows down. And so I want to make sure that those swales are draining and that I'm not getting compaction of the soil. So it's a little bit of a balance right now. I really want to get out in the garden more and take a look at it and start working that soil, but we really shouldn't be working soils that are wet. We can really damage that soil structure. So I would, you know, just tell people to be looking at those infrastructure improvements, reaching out when you need help. We have some you know, engineers that people can reach out to, but, you know, planning ahead for that because these intense storms aren't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a really good point about working the soil when it's wet. You know, if you're tilling or digging and it's just clotting and you can't break it up, just back off and wait because you are destroying the structure. It'll take years to kind of mitigate what you did. Mm-hmm. You know, just it's better to wait.
Okay. Well, it's our gardening show today, and our experts are here to answer your questions for the full hour. All you need to do is call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Terry. It has a picture on it. I showed it to Mary. Scott, I don't know if you can see it from where you are. I can't turn this screen around very well. Terry writes, I live in Claremont County, and there is a rampant weed that started maybe 10 years ago. It's an evergreen vine that looks similar to Euonymus japonicus. It intertwines in shrubs. What is it, and how can I get rid of it? It is prolific, so simply pulling it won't suffice. Mary said it looked like winter creeper to her.
That would be a very common one around here.
Yeah.
Especially if it's sort of a red color in the wintertime.
Oh.
That's a bad culprit. That's a subvariety called Coloradus, Colorado, Colorada. One of the endings. I'm not sure which. But that is an invasive plant. And especially if it's going up into trees or going vertical, it really becomes a problem because that's when it becomes a mature or an adult plant and starts producing fruit. And then it really spreads worse.
What kind of fruit?
Little berries, you know, not anything you would really notice, especially. And usually it's way up high up in the tree. It can really take over a woods or just vacant areas. Not everybody's a fan of glyphosate, but for situations like this, I don't know of many other ways to really treat it. But I have had success of spraying it with glyphosate, not the new Roundup, but the old one. That gets all the attention. But as a spot treatment for this, it works. And you just have to spray it when it's really cold, when it's really biologically active. So in the 40s, maybe early in spring, and spray it. And then wait, because it'll take quite a while, maybe 6 weeks, to begin to show like any kind of control.
You just spray once?
No, you might have to spray it multiple times. But the only other way is to get in there and just dig and pull and dig and pull and dig and pull. And that works, but it's really labor intensive and it takes a while.
Yeah.
And then as you're pulling, you definitely want to make sure that you are replacing that with something because, you know, Mother Earth doesn't like bare skin. So if you are pulling something out, have something to plant in its place, a native plant in its place, or think about sheet mulching so that you can put down several layers of cardboard or heavy newspaper and then mulch on top of that. You know, the suffocation won't get rid of it, but at least you can keep it away from the base of some of your perennials for a little while.
And I would even suggest, I'm sorry, Peter, but maybe waiting to plant until you start to get control of it, because otherwise it's just coming up through what you've planted. And yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, yeah. Peter.
Well, no, it's just it's like all plants are dependent on photosynthesis. So by removing the leaves of the upper part of the plant, you can eventually stop it from reproducing or continuing to grow. We've done this with a number of weeds, bindweed and different things, or even thistle. It's best to try and gently grub out as much of the root as you can, and of course cut and remove the things out of the tree. Because it's an invasive, I would bag it up and send it off to yard waste, and I would definitely not compost it at home. And then what to apply into your own garden. And then, like Mary said, you can't put down cardboard and wood chips or do things to kind of smother it. Or if it's just a small little patch, you know, just to keep hitting it every other week with a stirrup hoe and just cutting it off and just not allowing the leaves to form. Mm-hmm. It takes a while, but that can work. But if you can, get it when it's young.
Get it when it's young. Yeah. And Terry said that it's been around for like 10 years. Is that kind of mature at this point, or how long does it take?
Well, I mean, 10 years is plenty of time for it to spread quite widely, but it really doesn't become an adult and fruit until it starts climbing, going vertical. It's like ivy in that way. So it's a mature growing patch, I'm sure, and that means it's harder to take out. Whether it's gone vertical or not, it's kind of beside the point as far as removal. Mm-hmm. But you don't want it to go vertical, because then it spreads to wherever. And it's not really great for the trees either.
Yeah.
If it's going up a tree, if you like cut it off at the base, wait a few days or maybe even a week before you start trying to pull it off the tree. Give it a tie to die back, and then the little tendrils that are into the tree will be a little bit more weak and do less damage to the tree when you're pulling it down.
Okay. Well, again, we've got our experts here for the gardening show. For the full hour, call 513-419-7100 or email your questions to talk@wvxu.org. We talked a little bit about waterlogged or saturated soil. Mary, how do you tell when it's too wet? I mean, it seems like there's a Goldilocks point, right? You don't want it to be too dry. You don't want it to be too wet. What are you looking for there?
Yeah, so I'm looking to be able to kind of take a little bit of soil, put it in my hand, make it into a ball, but that ball is like easily broken apart. It's not like, you know, going to turn into a hard piece of clay that I'm going to like put on my windowsill. So I want that soil to be able to have recognizable parts to it as well. And so I'm like, okay, I can identify some of this sand. Maybe there's some silt in there. I have a really soggy patch in my yard that I have wanted to plant with Baptisia for years and years. It's so soggy that I actually have a hard time mowing it. My mower will get stuck right there. And so about 4 years ago, I decided to plant a redbud tree to try to absorb some of that water. Trees absorb lots and lots of water. Tall, mature trees can have hundreds of gallons of water in them. And so if you have a really soggy spot and you have the opportunity to possibly plant a tree that can have a little bit of wet feet, I think that's a really good way to start soaking it up. So I'm hopeful in the next couple of seasons I'll be able to dry that out a little bit. But yeah, if you're seeing sogginess, if you're seeing die off in your garden of any kind with that root rot that's just sticking around for a really long time, you also could think about amending with some compost. That will help the soil structure. But I'm really trying to do a lot of this work with plants. I'm having them work with me.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Mary Jane, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I'd like to know what are some ways of getting rid of marsh marigolds?
Okay. What do y'all think? Any tips?
Lesser celandine.
Oh, that's it. Okay, I'm thinking a true marshmallow marigold. Why do you want it to go on? Yeah, lesser celandine. Again, same trick is with euonymus is, you know, spot treating with an herbicide works. Depends on where you are. I mean, once it gets to be this giant sea of lesser celandine, I don't even know what you begin to do at that point. I really don't. It's a tough one. Pulling it, just you can leave the little bulbs behind and it just comes back.
When I found that the wildlife spread it around. So
yes.
I have a patch that I was trying to attack for several seasons, and I live very close to Mount Airy Forest, and the deer tracks, you know, you can see the deer trails because it gets these little bulbs get stuck in their hooves and then they kind of track it around. So I'm like, wow, this is a losing battle. We do spot treat it at the Civic Garden Center. We pay attention to the weather conditions. We don't want to be doing that just before rain or when it's wet. So you really have to pick your timing right so that herbicide doesn't go places you don't want it to go. But yeah,
and I found too with glyphosate applications that it's an early riser, early spring plant. It gets a very waxy leaf, which resists any kind of penetration. But if you if you hit it early, again on this cold, like 35 even, but up into the 50s or low 50s, if you, that's when it's really biologically active. And I have had good results with that with small patches. I would not want to go into a woods and just spray the whole, I mean, I don't even, yeah, it's a tough one. And I've seen literally miles of it now.
Yeah. What's the difference between lesser celandine and marsh marigold? I mean, they look kind of similar, don't they?
Completely different species. Marsh marigold is a native wetland plant, highly desirable, really cool.
So that's friend.
That's friend. Lesser celandine, God bless it, is a beautiful plant. It's a stunningly beautiful plant, but it is a marauder. It is bad news.
Why is it faux? Because it chokes out the other stuff?
Yeah, it just literally covers the ground. And then I don't know if anybody's, once it's really established, if any of ephemerals, any of our native plants can really come up through it. I don't see how they could.
Yeah.
Well, and also, you know, you can, if you just have small clumps in the yard, I would recommend digging those out as completely as you can. And then again, put them out for yard waste day, bag them, don't compost them. And then you can try just putting down a piece of cardboard or wood chips or just cardboard with some stones or bricks on it to try and smother it. But it is hard.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Mary Jane. I hope that helps. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. We are going to be back with our gardening show after a quick break. If you have questions, now's a good time to call. 513-419-7100 is the number, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our April gardening show. My guests are Civic Garden Center Ecology Education Manager Mary Dudley, Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach Scott Berline. They're ready to answer your questions and offer advice. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. So right before the break, we were talking about Mary Jane's problem with lesser celandine. And during the break, Mary, you mentioned another interesting way that you've got some friends who are dealing with it.
Yeah, so I have a few buddies that teach a backyard chicken class with me. And my friend Kara has made the point to say that, you know, there's no lesser celandine in her chicken yard. And so she's actually started sharing her chickens with her neighbors. And they'll put them in a little chicken tractor right over a lesser celandine patch for a couple of days. They'll scratch through that. Now, chickens are generalists, so they're not going to necessarily like leave something else alone and just go for the celandine. But her yard is lesser celandine free.
So rent a chicken. we have some other calls that have come in. Ginger asks, I'm going to plant a serviceberry tree. Can you recommend a good variety that shows off the four seasons?
There is one we've had really good luck with at the zoo. The others we've had mixed results with. But one called Luster is more tree-like than a lot of the serviceberries are. It never has any foliar diseases. And serviceberries are basically, they're a rose family plant. And they're a lot like crab apples. So they get a lot of those leaf diseases that kind of can make them unsightly. Some are better than others. Brilliance is one that's more of a shrubby type with really good fall color. But Luster's been a great performer for us at the zoo.
Okay. Anybody else have any other tips?
I really appreciate those trees, even in shrub form as well. I think they are a great tasty treat. So if you can beat the birds to them, you really are in for a good one. They're a really common landscaping plant too. So I'm always happy to see native plants that are kind of widely accepted as front yard species.
We got a call from another Terry who says, I have a similar problem with weeds. What can I do about onion grass?
Ooh, you should eat it. It's delicious. I just made this really nice forager spread. So here's my little recipe. Get some cream cheese, soften it up, a couple tablespoons of sour cream, cut that onion grass up, and serve it on some crackers. I just did that at a class last night, and it was delightful. So.
I've always wondered. I don't know. If the soil is just right, it pulls really nicely. But if it's too dry or too wet, it'll pull off. And then but if you can pull it and those bulbs all come out with it, it's the most satisfying feeling in the world. It's just great. And then you can apparently just...
Yeah. Then you send it all over to
friends.
Mary. And, yeah. Send it to Mary and she'll make something out of it.
That's right.
Well, another thing, like what Scott was talking about, the soil texture and dryness, if it's heavy clay soil and it's wet, they're not going to want to pull out. But if you use a hori-hori knife for a dandelion... a pruner or even a narrow trowel, if you kind of loosen the soil around it, you can also use a spading fork to kind of open the soil up a little bit around it, and then you just put the fork in. You don't turn the soil over. You just rock it back and forth, and that often will allow you to get out the whole clumps because you want to get the bulbs.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
We got an email from Jack. Jack says, how do you tell when it's better to give up hope for recovery of green giant arborvitae that have turned brown from the drought that afflicted them last year? I know it can take a while for them to recover, but my wife is anxious to get on with replacement. I am more patient. Any tips? I hope wife doesn't hear you calling her anxious on the radio. That's my tip.
My experience with them is once they go brown, there's really little hope of any kind of recovery. And even if they do, they're thin and they don't have the look that they once had. You got to be so careful with keeping those watered when it gets really dry. That's the main thing that causes that, especially if they go in the winter dehydrated, and then cold winters can really just desiccate them, and then you have this situation.
Scott, are you saying the wife is right?
Is always right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, are there specific varieties of them that do a little better in this region? I know they talk about the variety that's at Spring Grove Village. Spring Grove Cemetery.
They both do about the same. They're both, okay. And they're but generally very good plants. But, if like the drought we had last summer, that was a bruiser. And I would guess that was the culprit, and especially newly planted ones. You see that all the time, new rows of them, and that's kind of a bad idea because you see 9 of them planted out, and then random 3 brown and die,
like kind of missing teeth.
That's tough. Once they go brown, they're usually on the downward side.
Mm. Okay. Well, we have a question from Reva. Reva asks, I have low spots in my lawn. What shrub would you recommend? Maybe weeping willow.
I like weeping willow with some caution. I did grow up and am currently on a septic system at my home. And so you definitely want to make sure that you are planting that tree away from any kind of leach fields or septic lines. But they will do well with wet feet. There are other types of willow that you could consider as well. As far as shrubs
it's
go.
It's not a shrub.
Yeah, no, it's
not. It's very large.
Big, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
What about high bush, cranberries?
If you have a really low pH, like if you're out in Claremont County, you could probably do that. Mm-hmm. In Hamilton County, there's some pockets where the acidity is right enough for that. I'm trying to think here. I would think that, Kodiak Orange, the new, what is that shrub called? Bush Honeysuckle.
Oh, yeah.
I think that could probably handle reasonably
well. Are you recommending planting honeysuckle?
That caveat. It's a native plant. It's not a real honeysuckle. So
it's fake honeysuckle.
It's fake honeysuckle, and I cannot come up with the Latin just now. It'll come to me in a bit.
Okay.
But there's some nice varieties out, cultivars that are Kodiak Orange, Kodiak Red, Kodiak Black, mm-hmm. all of them really nice plants. Yeah. It's kind of a suckering plant. It spreads a little bit.
What about 9 bark?
I don't know about that for wet.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, another thing, too, is like depending on how large your area is, you can, bring in fill to bring it up. And then if you want a lawn, then seed it. Or else you could, make it deeper and have it be a rain garden or a sort of a small wetland area.
Yeah, we have some really beautiful chokecherry and river birch in some of our rain gardens that do very well with wet feet.
I think the deciduous hollies would do well enough. Those are beautiful plants, especially for winter color, because you get holly berries throughout the winter on bare branches, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm curious, is the caller, was that an email or was the caller on the line?
That was an email. Oh, okay. Yes, yes. We don't have any callers on the line right now. So, hey, listeners, you can get on the phone right now. Call 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, but Peter wants to hear from you on the phone, so yeah. Call us right now. We did get an email from Rebecca. Rebecca asks, can you tell me if coconut core or coconut fiber is a good medium for growing potatoes, carrots, lettuce in grow bags? Also, what's a good companion plant to keep bugs from these plants? Peter, I'm going to throw that one to you.
Well, I don't generally recommend using the grow bags for the potatoes, but if people are tight on space, it's a way to go. I would want to do more of a compost soil mix than these the coconut fiber. It's almost water resistant, like peat is. Mm. So I think it's also more expensive, so I would kind of look for more of a the bag. If you don't have access to a large compost place to get it for free, I would recommend getting an OMRI approved bag compost soil mix.
Okay. Yeah, and you can grow in the
root. Not a potting mix, though. Yeah.
Yeah, those root pouches are nice too. So they're not like, the we're talking about like kind of the wool, bags that have good drainage. But you are going to have to water them quite a bit in order to keep them at the level of hydration that they're going to need. I am also not a huge fan of core. I'm trying to get away from peat as well. So if you are able to save some of your leaves, don't save black walnut leaves if you can help it. But if you've got neighbors around, I was just at my sister-in-law's the other day. I'm like, oh, you bagged up all your leaves. Thank you so much. And like, just take those with me. So try to be a little bit resourceful in that way. But yeah, like Peter said, it's really hydrophobic.
And you can also mix straw into it, particularly after you put in the soil initial when you plant the potatoes. But as you're sort of adding it as you're going up, because you wanted that kind of the limb up, and then each shoot sends out additional roots and that'll grow tubers. So you can use, like Mary said, crushed leaves, but straw is also good.
What about companion plants? She also asked, what's a good companion plant to keep bugs from the potatoes, carrots, and lettuce?
I like to plant things that have pretty strong smells. So if you are able to put in some herbs around your garden, marigolds are a classic, to keep some bugs away. But if you've got a pot of mint, or you're able to put some lavender or some rosemary around, those really tend to deter a lot of different pests. But you can also kind of have a temptation buffet for them somewhere else. And so I think planting a row of native plants that has, attractive to pollinators, and they're going to be providing nectar sources, or maybe they're a host plant for certain caterpillars. Maybe you're attracting bald-faced hornets that are able to kind of patrol your plants for you. And so if you're really having a lot of pest issues, I would look at your biodiversity and think about how you can leverage some of these other good beneficial insects to help you with that.
And okay. If you're growing in the bags, you have a kind of a contained situation. You can use insect netting, or even you can buy some inexpensive tool at a fabric store. That way you don't have to buy a 100-foot roll.
Okay.
And buy that and just sort of loosely drape that over it, and maybe using clips or something, clip it to the side of those bags, and that should also help a lot.
Great. Now we have some callers on the line. All we had to do was say that Peter wanted to hear from the callers, and then the phone lines start ringing. We have Claire on the line. Hi, Claire. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I have a retaining wall kind of under my back deck, south-facing. One end of it stays shaded and very damp, and I can't get anything to grow. Recommendation.
Are you talking like draping over the wall, or above the wall, or in the wall?
Above the wall.
Above the wall.
Above the wall, in the wall.
Damp and shady?
Yep, she said damp and shady.
Oh, so she's growing on top of the wall.
Okay.
Or this soil behind it.
It's interesting that it's damp back there.
Yeah,
above a wall, you would think would be draining. Well, let's think of shade plants for wet. Some of the sedges would be really good. Pennsylvania sedge would probably work. You know, you're not getting a flower per se from it, but it's a beautiful texture and it would look really cool kind of draping over that wall. It's a grass-like plant, so it has that look. I would think if it's not too damp, you could probably get away with hellebores, which would be really nice for four-season interest. Great flowers in the spring, deer-proof. Sedges are deer-proof as well, which would be nice.
Deer-proof.
Epimediums probably would work there, unless it's just soaking wet. But those, Tony Avent told me, a lot of them are native to waterfalls, actually. They're always touted for dry shade, but they're native to areas with waterfalls.
Oh.
So I would think that would be kind of a nice area. And it's a really neat plant, too. Also deer-proof.
Okay.
Really cute flowers this time of year.
I would also just make sure you're checking your infrastructure. So a lot of time, I don't know about your wall, but a lot of times walls will have drainage of some kind. And so they're backfilled in and then they put some drainage tile in. Sometimes you can see that daylighted. And so if that's clogged for some reason, you really don't want to compound a problem if you're adding a plant and then those roots get in there and start breaking that up. So I would recommend having someone out and look at the structural integrity of the wall before you do much, because maybe it's a simple matter of kind of cleaning out a drain and then it's not going to be as wet.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Claire. We've got a bunch of people on the line, so we're going to try to zoom through another call before we have to take another break. Let's see. We have Tom on the line. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks a lot. Speaking of honeysuckle, years ago I took out a row of honeysuckle in my backyard and was left the roots in. I have two questions. First question is, do the roots poison the soil, and is there anything I can do to enhance that? And right next door is a walnut tree that I'm considering cutting down because not a whole lot grows around that. Is that also poisoning the soil? Thank you.
Sure thing.
Any allelopathic chemicals that honeysuckle may put down, and I've heard different things about whether it does or not, but the roots break down pretty quickly, and any of those chemicals would as well. So, you know, a year or two afterwards, I don't think you'll have any issue with anything from the honeysuckle. The black walnut, different story. Yeah, that does put out a chemical that does affect some plants, not every plant. And again, there's a lot of dispute, a lot of different lists that you have plants that you can plant or not underneath walnuts, and none of them are the same. You know, the science is not really honestly very good about that. And so, you know, you can play around with it and work and just see what you can do. And if you just are frustrated too much in the end, then maybe start thinking about removing the walnut. But walnuts are pretty cool trees.
They're great.
You know, and they're great for wildlife. So I'd be really hesitant.
Yeah, and with the where you've removed the honeysuckle, I mean, what another thing you can do is we have had good luck with replacing it with other sorts of shrubs, so whether it be bush cherries, hazelnuts, different things. So if you sometimes the honeysuckle grows in areas where people want to have a privacy hedge by default. And so once you at home, when we removed the honeysuckle, we wanted to provide some sort of cover for us. And we have used both the native and then cultivars of hazelnut. They do really well. And I don't think I agree with what you said about the allelopathic. When they're alive, that's an issue, they say. But when I've taken things out. Yeah. And also, if you're on a hillside, don't go ripping out all the roots of the honeysuckle because you're going to end up with a landslide.
Yeah,
so sometimes you want to pull out the roots. Other times you really don't until you get new growth there.
Well, thanks, Tom. We appreciate your call and appreciate your listening. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we will be finishing up today's gardening show. If you've got questions, call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with the tail end of our gardening show today. My guests are Civic Garden Center Ecology Education Manager Mary Dudley, Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach Scott Berline. They're ready to take your questions. We've got a number of people on the line, but you can call 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We have Jim on the line. Hey, Jim, thanks for your patience. What's your question?
I'm looking for a fast-growing tree that doesn't mind wet feet and shade.
Okay, that's a very specific question. I appreciate that. Mary, you've been talking about wet feet. You have any thoughts about that?
I'm going to actually defer that one to the tree guy.
Okay, straight to red maple or the Freeman maples, which is a hybrid between our silver and the red maples. Those would be great choices.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks, Jim.
Locust work?
Locust doesn't really like wet feet.
Oh, it doesn't?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Hope that helps. Now we have Greg. Hi, Greg. Thanks for your call. What is your question?
Yeah, I've grown a white birch or paper birch from a twig, and it's getting time to put it where I want it. Any recommendations? I'm also going to put a quaking aspen next to it, but not too close. So any recommendations on those?
So you're a fan of white bark. Neither do great in this area. So the birch I would put in the coolest spot you've got with good, consistent moisture. And the aspen I would put in the coolest place you've got with drier soil.
Okay, Greg, I hope that helps. Thank you so much. We're kind of zooming through some of these because we're running out of time. We've got a lot of people on hold. Now we've got Dan. Dan, thanks for listening. What did you want to talk about?
Hi. My wife and I bought a couple of apple trees last weekend, and we've had nothing but rain up here in Lynchburg. And my lot is really wet. The trees are in burlap, and they're in containers. They're about 6 feet tall. How long will they stay like that without harming them? And what's good to put in the soil to make it a little lighter?
Well, I think that you can, when you go to plant them out, you want to dig a hole that's 2 to 3 times the size of the ball. And when you do that, you want to kind of pierce the sides of the hole, not have a shiny, hard surface on them. Then when you can add some compost to the soil that you dug out of the hole, because you don't want the pure compost, because you end up making a pot and they'll root bound. So I prefer to remove the burlap. Then do that soil mix and put it in. You want to have them be a little high and then mount soil around them, because over time it'll naturally want to settle a little bit. So you do want them growing into a mound. But you should be fine for 2 or 3 weeks. You may want to, don't put them in full sun. Keep them out of direct wind in a kind of protected area. Don't put them inside a garage, but keep them outside. But just keep them protected. So 2 or 3 weeks, I don't see why you would have a problem. I mean, nurseries will have them out in the lot for another 4 months.
That's right.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dan. I sure hope that helps. We now have Louise. Hey, Louise. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you. I got a question. My friend bought a house, and the previous owners had bamboo, like, in a certain area, but now it's like her whole yard is encompassed with bamboo, and she doesn't know how to get rid of it, and she does have clay soil.
Bamboo.
That's another bad. Really bad one. This has been a really fun program of bad plants. With bamboo, it's a little different. I think this is a case where you really kind of have to dig and get those runners as well as you can, and just do the most damage at one time that you can to the whole clump. And then you're going to follow up every year with mowing or somehow knocking back those little shoots that want to come up. Hit them early. You can mow them when they're soft, and just keep at it until it's eventually gone.
Every year for the rest of your life,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Don't even start the project if you expect to die in the next 5 years.
Because, oh, gosh. Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. Some really joyful advice from Scott there.
Well, and don't plant any shrubs or any kind of perennials in the area that you immediately, I mean, you need to wait several years to get it under control.
Okay. Well, thanks, Louise. I hope that helps your friend. That's a tough one. We have Kevin on the line. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Lucy. Thanks for taking my call. I have a clump of lilies. They come up in the springtime, and then the flower comes out later this summer. And I need to move them because they're underneath the bush. They're not getting enough sun. I need to know when to move them.
Honestly, as soon as you can, just get at it. This is a great time of year to move anything because we have fairly consistent moisture. If we get dry, make sure you water. But go at it. The sooner the better.
Thanks, okay. Lucy.
Sure thing. Thanks for listening, Kevin. We have Jeff on the line. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hey there, what's your question?
I just started my cannabis seeds the other day, just wanting to know if it's better to go in pots or in the ground. I know that's a weed, so a lot of sun is good. And also, deer apparently love little cannabis seedlings and munch them right up. So just looking for advice.
Okay, Mary, I'm going to toss that one to you.
Yeah, so first of all, I would recommend that you check with your municipality to see what regulations might exist for growing to make sure that you are following those regulations. It is going to be important to know whether or not you have a photo period plant or an autoflower plant. If you are growing an autoflower, which would be a type of cannabis ruderalis, then that plant needs to be potted in its end space as quickly as possible so that you don't have any kind of shock for the roots as you're up potting. If it's a photo period plant, you've got a little bit more flexibility. You could put it into a 5-gallon pot and then you could up pot it into a 10 or 15 gallon. It is a little bit challenging to grow in soil that hasn't been amended, and so you want it to be really well draining. But you've got a couple different options there. Just I would recommend netting or some kind of caging to make sure that the deer aren't coming and munching up all of your little sprouts.
Yeah, because then you have to buy the deer Cheetos after that happens. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for that call. We appreciate that. Good luck with your plants. We have Elizabeth on the line. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there. The perimeter of my lot slopes down to the sidewalk. And with the slope, it's scary to mow because it has grass. I want to replace that with Pachysandra. But I'm afraid if I kill the grass, I'm going to lose stability in my soil. Can I just drill kind of holes and plug in the Pachysandra, or will the grass just kind of fight and I'll just have a mess?
You'll have a mess. Yeah, you would need a plant that grows much thicker and bolder to shade out the grass and cover it fast so that you're not, you'll just have grass and weeds and Pachysandra all mixed together there. So if you're really insistent on Pachysandra, which isn't a terrible choice, it's not a great one, but go ahead and kill the grass and cover it with straw. Not like a fabric, those are terrible, but something that, you know, a good layer of straw or something would be great, or mulch, even better, I guess. And then plant the Pachysandra really thick, lots of them, close together. Maybe boost it with a little Miracle-Gro or some other kind of liquid fertilizer to really get them going as fast as you can.
What else would you recommend instead?
Something just a little taller, something that will suppress weeds over the long term. So, again, hellebores or hostas if you don't have deer, or sedges or Baptisia if you really can get away with it, but a plant that you can plant real thick that will suppress weeds, and then you've got a good look that you don't have to manicure or do maintenance on forever and ever and ever.
Okay. Well, thanks, Elizabeth. Good luck with that hillside. We have Joan on the line. Hi, Joan. Thanks for listening.
Hey. Thanks for having the show. I've been waiting for it. I have a question about lilacs. Do they eventually age out of blooming? That's some older lilacs. The blooms started to be sparse. After that, I cut them back and kind of reshaped them because they were getting leggy. Now, this year, there were no blooms at all. The leaves are, I forgot to tell you, I also fertilized them. And this year, no blooms at all. The leaves look great. The plants look healthy. but no blooms.
No blooms because you pruned it back last year. So that's a plant, if you're going to prune it all, you have to do it immediately following the bloom. Otherwise, you're cutting off the flower buds for next year. So because you cleaned it up, which is a good thing, and reshaped it, kind of probably reinvigorated it, it should really perform well for you next year.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks, Joan. Good luck. Okay, we have an email from Hannah. Hannah writes, I'd like to replace my small grass lawn with a low ground cover that won't require mowing. That is the dream, isn't it? I'm looking into some creeping thyme, sedum, and phlox. Any suggestions?
All of those are fine, but you got to get control of the weeds first.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'll be a different kind of maintenance. You're not mowing it all the time, but you will be cleaning it up.
Okay.
And again, the thicker plant that you can get, the one that just will shade the ground the best, is going to be the better one for weed control.
Well, I want to circle back to Reva because, Scott, you had a light bulb go off
of
over your head.
Yeah, and fortunately, it was before I was in the car driving to Cleveland. But, buttonbush is a really cool native shrub that you can grow it literally in standing water, but it does well in normal soil, too. It's beautiful. It's great for pollinators. There's a cultivar now that's a little more compact and probably better for most yards called Sugar Shack. And it, unlike the straight species, even has really good fall color.
Sounds so cute too, Sugar Shack. We have an email from Jandy who writes, can you recommend something I can plant instead of grass seed in the backyard? Over 20 years, I've tried many times to get grass to grow with no lasting success. When the trees are in leaf, most of the perimeter of the yard is in shade. Low growing weeds grow well there. The center area should have enough sun, but still grass won't grow. Soil is generally heavy clay. I'd prefer something that is pollinator friendly if possible.
Lesser sound.
Oh, man.
No, that was a joke. Everybody, don't ever.
Man, no. They're coming after you.
Wild
ginger? That sounds pretty.
Yeah, cool. That would be really cool. I keep going back to sedges. They're great. It's not really a pollinator plant, except that it is a host for certain butterflies, but it doesn't really produce flowers. But yeah, I like the idea of wild ginger.
Yeah, we have a couple of little spots of the wild ginger with those little woodland poppies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so those are nice.
Yeah. We also got a question from Sydney who asks how to get rid of celandine. Is that the same thing as lesser celandine?
I'm sure it is.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to suggest, Sydney, that you listen to this show either during the 8 o'clock repeat or when it's on the website later today, because we had a really good discussion about lesser celandine with lots of great tips. Oh my goodness, all those calls all at once. Peter, I'm just going to ask you, what should we be planting now?
Well, with soil, you can work the soil and it dries out. Some of the early things you can start thinking about are beans. We've been putting in our carrot starts. And then before too long, it'll be time, when soil's dried out again, like I said, is that you can start putting in potatoes as another early crop. In terms of transplants, any of the cabbages, brassica families, you can plant carrots now with alternate rows of radishes as it's coming up. Things, everybody's favorite tomatoes, peppers, you want to kind of wait till, the official frost date, I think, is it April 28th.
Yeah.
You know, but I always say wait till after the mid-May, Mother's Day or later.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those.
And then you can plant something nice for your mom.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've been talking with Civic Garden Center Ecology Education Manager Mary Dudley, Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach, Scott Berline. Thank you all so much for your time today. It's been lots of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.